We invite you to stay tuned as Meet a Pioneer is next.
A good sound is hard to find. You always get the other kind. Yes, your dial is set to the greatest sound yet. 660 on your radio is KFAR in Fairbanks. 'Cause a good sound nowadays is hard to find.
Good morning, friends, and welcome to KFAR Radio's Meet a Pioneer. Today is October 4th, 1985. I'm Gail Malloy, and each Friday morning at 9 o'clock, we meet a pioneer. We're going to spend the next hour with Roy and Ruth Olson. This morning's presentation is sponsored by Two Rivers Lodge, Denali Chiropractic Clinic, the Riverboat Discovery, the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop, Larson's Jewelers, Mount McKinley Bank, Last Frontier Realty, the Rose and Thistle, and Wolfgang Falk. And now, the Alaska Flag Song. I'd like to welcome to the guests to the studios of KFAR Radio my guests Roy and Ruth Olson. Good morning, folks.
Good morning, Gail.
Good morning, Gail.
Well, it's so nice to have you here. And we've had many of your friends on, and I understand you've listened to the program almost from the beginning.
Yes, we have. Quite a few of them. We've had to miss a few, but not very many.
Well, and I wanted to mention today is the anniversary show of Meet a Pioneer.
That's what you just told us, and I think that's wonderful that we could be here for that first anniversary.
It was a year ago, October, on this first Friday, it was the 5th, but it's been exactly a year, and my first guest that October 4th was Stan Bennett, and he was best known for his work in engineering and working for Cap Lathrop and putting up the original KFAR transmitter on Farmers Loop Road. But welcome, and you're our special anniversary couple. Speaking of anniversary, you just had a golden one.
Oh. Yeah,
yes, we had our 50th, and we had a wonderful celebration at Circle Hot Springs, thanks to our daughters who put on a real gala affair for us.
And may I add something? I think, aside from all the wonderful friends that were there and the beautiful buffet that the staff put out and all the work that our girls did, one of the highlights of that was having Charlotte Ames there to play the piano in the lobby as she did many, many years ago in the 30s when she worked there for 4 years. And every Saturday night at least, there would be a dance. And she played the piano, and there were other people who worked there. One lady played the banjo, and one man played the saxophone, and always just have the best time. So it brought back all those good memories to us. And all the friends that came from near and far, it was really a wonderful experience.
That was on September 7th of this year.
That's right.
Uh-huh. So that means you wed in 1935.
That's right.
Now, where exactly did you marry?
We were married up on Deadwood, about 12 miles from the springs, at Ruth's folks' place, where they were mining. And we were married by the commissioner who was stationed at Circle Hot Springs. His name was Harry Greep.
Uh-huh.
And we had a small gathering. My sister was there, for one, and several people from the Road Commission and a few of the miners in the area, and Frank Nash, our district engineer at the time, was there. And
where were you born, Roy?
I was born in Seattle, Washington, in 1910, and raised in Seattle, and went to school, a great school, up until about the fifth grade, and we moved to Arlington, Washington, and lived there for 4 years, and had a very enjoyable time. My brother, my sister, and myself. My dad worked in logging camps there north of Everett and Arlington, and our farm, a little 20-acre farm, was on the Stillaguamish River.
Mm-hmm.
And the town swimming hole was on our property, and we really had a lot of fun there. We had 10 acres of bottom land and 10 acres of upland, we called it.
Uh-huh. Now, you came to Fairbanks because you had an uncle working in the mine at Chatham?
Yes, he had a gold mining dredge, the smallest flume dredge in the interior, I believe.
The smallest?
Yes.
Is that the one that you have the buckets from at your place?
Yes, I have two of the buckets, same as they have at the School of Mines out at the university, at the entrance to the School of Mines.
Uh-huh. Except and these are little buckets that you had.
Yes.
Although that was, I saw pictures of that. That was still a very effective dredge.
Yes, it dug a lot of gold, too.
Now, you were 18 when you came up, about May of 1928.
Yes. And I came up after finishing high school in Seattle. And wrote to my uncle and asked him if he had a job for me, and he said, I have a job for you if you can drive a Model T Ford. And I wrote back and told him I could, which I stretched a point a little there, but I made it all right. I wasn't much to drive in a Ford truck, but I found out that there was very many obstacles to driving a Ford truck in Alaska, mainly the roads and the cold weather. And starting a Model T truck with 600W grease in the rear end and heavy oil in the crankcase, it was quite a chore.
Now, before you came up to drive that truck, had you grown, well, you didn't grow up with trucks, but was that like a brand new experience of a modern invention or contraption or that sort of
thing? Oh, no, the engine was, and transmission was basically like we used in our runabouts outside, you know, in our Ford Roadsters and passenger cars, but this was a little Ford truck with a Ruxtel axle and a box in back that it wasn't a dump truck. You had to shovel into it and shovel out of it.
How many loads a day did you do?
About six or seven.
And how much was in a load?
Just about a ton.
And you had to haul that many loads and shovel it in and shovel it out each time.
Yeah. and that we didn't stockpile any coal. We just hauled enough to keep the dredge going because the dredge was moving along all the time, and we would just haul enough to supply the dredge from day to day. And we managed that all right.
Now, you were a summer worker then for your uncle over, what, about 3 summers or so?
Yes. And, uh-huh. and I would go outside and go to business college in the winter, and I finished that course, and I took a job with Sands Motors in Seattle, a Studebaker dealer, and found that that was peanuts compared with what I had been making, so I came right back to Alaska and stayed.
Uh-huh. We're going to take our first break and be back with Roy and soon Ruth Lars Olson. I was about to say, Larson, I see why. One of our sponsors is Larson's Jewelers, Roy Larson. I'd like to mention they do offer 10% off of all their products and services to senior citizens. When Roy Larson started Larson's Jewelers on that day back in 1946, he had big dreams of what he'd like his business to become. Over the years, some of those dreams changed and others came true. Today, Larson's is still a family-owned business and one of the finest and most complete jewelry stores in the interior. Almost 40 years of skill and experience go into everything they do. Like Fairbanks, they've grown, but they're still your friend and neighbor. Larson's, fine jeweler since 1946 at 405 Noble.
Twenty years ago, Mount McKinley Bank was founded by a group of forward-looking individuals who saw a need in the community. The new bank offered low-interest loans to encourage new home building in the Fairbanks area. It was an immediate success. Today, Mount McKinley Mutual Savings Bank is still located at 530 4th Avenue in the same building where founder Julian Rice and first president Judge Vernon Forbes served on the first board of trustees. The bank has seen a lot of history, and their solid background of investment and involvement in the community has earned Mount McKinley their own place in Fairbanks history. Mount McKinley Mutual Savings Bank is proud to sponsor Meet a Pioneer. At Mount McKinley, they're looking forward to a future as proud as their past.
Sponsors of Meet a Pioneer enjoy the history and people of Fairbanks, like Dorothy Rice of the Rose and Thistle, a member of the community since 1956. The Rose and Thistle is many things, a florist shop with two experienced designers who do lovely fresh and silk arrangements, a wedding and formal shop with over 100 gowns in the shop, plus personal service and consultation. You'll find the Rose and Thistle at 330 Wendell Street, Monday through Saturday. Stay tuned for more Meet a Pioneer with Gail Malloy.
Welcome back to Meet a Pioneer. My guests are Roy and Ruth Olson. Now, you decided after going back that the money just wasn't what you'd become accustomed, Roy, so you decided to come back to Alaska and stay. Now, I have to tell our audience that during the break, you were kind of telling a funny story on Roy about school days.
Yes. Well, my school days in Arlington, I remember Johnny Contento from Family Shoe Store went to school in Arlington, too, and also Irene Palmer. Irene, by the way, was, she was a beautiful blonde girl at that time, and she had long blonde hair, and she sat right in front of me, and her long curls were quite tempting to me, and I remember dipping one of the curls in my inkwell, and I guess I was scolded pretty severely by the teacher for that. And
I thought that was just fairy tale stories, but you really did it, huh?
Oh, you bet I did. You can. I guess that's Irene will probably tell you about that.
Ruth, does he still get into mischief?
Yes, he does. If I don't watch him.
Well, you came back to stay then.
Yes, and I went to work for the road commission, and one of my first jobs, I remember in the winter, I was fortunate enough to get winter work, too. We were redecking the bridge, the old Cushman Street Bridge. And that was a cold job. It was really a cold draft on that river all the time, seemed like. And that really initiated me into winter work here in Alaska. I stuck with it for quite a few years.
The Cushman Bridge?
Uh-huh.
Huh.
That bridge now is up at Cottonwood, north of Nome, Alaska.
Now, that's the old one, basically where it is now, but it was at a different angle, certainly a different-looking bridge.
Yeah, it was... No, it's the same angle, but it was just parallel to the new bridge now.
Uh-huh. Where the St. Joe's Church, Catholic Church is.
Yes, uh-huh. Uh-huh. About the same location.
What do you remember most about working on that bridge? I guess the cold and...
Oh, yes, and... It had an overhead truss, and the overhead clearance was limited to high, a certain height of load. And I remember a sign on one end of the bridge said, "Please walk your horses," because the rhythm of a horse trotting across the bridge would create a bouncing action that was dangerous to the structure,
huh.
You know, it
sure.
Would set up a bouncing action. So I thought that sign was unique.
I hadn't heard of that. That's interesting. I'm trying to envision horses and buggies and wagons about town. Well, the water wagon, of course.
Yeah.
Remember that? Huh. Well, how did you happen to meet Ruth?
Well, we went to dances quite often, every Saturday night for sure, at the Moose Hall or Eagles Hall or out at the university. And I met Ruth out at the Moose Hall through a mutual friend. And one thing I remember about going to the dances at the Moose Hall was the gallery we had around the upper level of the hall where the mothers of most of the schoolgirls sat as chaperones and watched the actions down below, and to see that the young fellas behaved all right, I guess.
Huh. Yes, Ruth, may you...
I said my mother wasn't there.
Well, there was a good reason. I understand. Let's start with your story now. There was a reason why mother wasn't here, because you were living actually with another family here in town. Is that correct at that time?
Yes, for 1 year I did. Uh-huh.
Well, let's start from the beginning and catch up on your story. Now, yours is a very unique one. There have been many articles written about it. Your story starts in 1915. You were born July of 1915. Tell us the circumstances of your folks being here and how where you were born.
Well, I was born in Dawson because the time that I was within a month or so, I guess I was due, and my mother went by horse and buggy from Deadwood Creek to Circle City to take the boat. And the paddle, the stern wheeler, and at that time, that particular week, it was going upriver, so she went to the hospital at Dawson. There was no road over to Fairbanks at that time, and no, you know, in the summer, so I was born in Dawson, and I guess she brought me back when I was about a month old to the Deadwood Creek.
Now, where'd your folks come from?
From Norway. They grew up together in Norway. My dad was 3 years older than mother, and they knew each other all their lives. And were married there, and he came over first to his uncle in Wisconsin, who sent him a ticket. And he came there and worked there for a little while, and then I guess he must have heard about coming to Alaska, and he came to Dawson first, but he came down to Deadwood Creek in 1904. And there were 7 partners in this particular piece of ground on Lower Deadwood, and one of them was Nels Rasmussen from Circle, and incidentally, his two of his daughters are still living here, who are my very best friends, Elsie O'Leary and Lillian Heilman. And their father was a partner with my dad in the mining ground, although he wasn't an active miner. He was in the freighting business. He was a silent partner, but nevertheless. And that particular partnership, it was called a Swedish syndicate, although there was just one Swede and the rest were Norwegians and Danes. But I guess at that time, any Scandinavian was thought of as a Swede.
Mm-hmm.
And so my friendship with those girls goes back as long as I can remember. And
now, we're about where, for benefit of our audience, is Deadwood Creek?
It's about, it's in the Circle District, probably 9 miles from Central, I believe. Excuse me. And there are many creeks over there, of course, and it's between Circle Hot Springs and Central.
And when your father went back and then brought your mother, she knew no English, had not seen, really didn't know what she was getting into, I bet.
Well, hardly. It did happen that she had to spend one winter out in the States. She had a cousin in North Dakota. And because my dad had to come back that fall, and he was coming down the Yukon in a small boat, and he couldn't bring her. So, she stayed with his cousin and worked in a laundry in North Dakota that one winter. And, of course, she was very lonely because she was away from her family in Norway and away from my dad. But spring came, and then she came north, and one of the... Well, not having learned the language very well, and being, she took everything literally that people said to her. You know, she didn't think of it as being a joke or anything. This one person that brought her out from Circle, who later became a very good friend of my folks, but he said to his wife, I like Mrs. Larson. He said, she could put her shoes under my bed any time. And my mother turned to my dad and she said, why would he think I'd want to put my shoes under his bed? You know, she just took everything literally.
Uh-huh.
But it wasn't very long until she was, learned the language. And, of course, my parents always spoke with a Norwegian accent, I think. And there were some older ladies on the creek who were very good to her and taught her American cooking, particularly her lemon pie was probably the best I've ever tasted, I think.
Now, she was the only woman out there.
Well, not at first, no. There were quite a few people on the creek at first, women. But as the years went by, and especially after the war, most of them had left. And then quite a few people were lost on the Princess Sophia that went down. There were, I think, 13 people from the Circle District on that boat. It was the last boat out in the fall. And I know that several of my folks' friends were lost on that boat. But anyway, the last 3 years that we were there, my mother was the only woman on the creek, on Deadwood Creek.
And most of the miners, I guess, were bachelors. And
yes.
Probably came around the house a lot, didn't they?
Oh, yes. And usually on Sunday, I think they were almost always there for dinner, And of course, my dad had quite a few men working with him, his two brothers, my uncles, and I think probably there were about eight in the crew.
So you were the only child there?
Yes, uh-huh.
What was that like? What do you describe your experiences of growing up in a mining camp and being the only child?
Well, I didn't know any different. I think I was a happy child, but of course it was very different. I didn't know how to play games that children knew. You know, I had never been around children very much, very few. The ones that lived at Miller House, their parents had the Miller House, and they were there in the summer, but they'd go out to Seattle in the winter to go to school. In fact, Madeline Wilkinson is still living. She lives in Seattle, and we correspond at Christmas time. Her son mines over in the Circle District now.
Now, the fellow certainly took good care of you, though. I don't think you were for lack of attention.
Oh, I'm afraid not. I think I was probably spoiled, but most of all by my dad, I think. And although he always said I wasn't spoiled, but I can remember some things that I know I was.
Do you have some favorite Christmas memories?
Oh, I think all the Christmases were something very special, because mostly the preparation for Christmas was exciting. You know, everything came in the mail. You know, everything was ordered. There were no stores, of course, and all the packages arriving, and Mother baking special things, and everyone gathering at our house on Christmas Eve, because being Scandinavian, that was a custom to have Christmas on Christmas Eve. And Santa Claus came, too. One of the miners was Santa Claus for me. And I never thought it was strange that he had a Norwegian accent, because most people that I knew had.
Who was Santa Claus?
My dad's partner, Jean Langlo.
Uh-huh. You didn't know that, though, right?
No, I was so naive. I believed everything they told me. And I asked my mother, why wasn't Langlo there at Christmas Eve when Santa Claus came? And she said, well, he has to go down to the mouth of the creek to hold the reindeer, because there's too much brush, they can't get up through there, and Santa Claus has to walk the rest of the way and carry the sack of toys. And I believed that. That's just how naive I was.
Oh, I'm sure they had fun doing all that for you.
I think maybe it was just as exciting for the adults, maybe, as it was for me, but it was all over so quickly. Mother had made a, I think, or somehow or another, he had a red Santa Claus outfit. And he had a sack of toys, and we could hear the sleigh bells after dinner. You know, he had bells on, and he would be coming up, and everyone was listening, and pretty soon he'd come through the door and throw this sack of toys down or set it down. And I guess each of the men were just as excited probably to see which toy I liked the best. Anyway, I didn't play with toys much, because I didn't have anyone to play with, but I was outdoors mostly in the summer, at least, with my dad.
You helped him out?
Oh, no, I didn't help. I was probably a hindrance. But my uncle had made me some little tiny sluice boxes. Now, that was part of the mining, you know.
Uh-huh.
He was kind of a carpenter, and he made those for me, and I had a water barrel and a garden hose, which was my hydraulic outfit, and they salted the ground a little bit so that I'd have gold, and I cleaned up every day to find the gold. But one day, Riley Erickson thought it would be fun to see what I would do if I found a quarter, they called it a two-bit piece, in front of the boxes. So when I cleaned up that day, here was that money. And I knew then that something was different. I knew that wasn't right. They didn't find the money in the ground. But just things like that. They all did things to please me. We had the postmaster. See, we had a post office on Deadwood at that time. And he was a retired teacher, an older man. I've often wondered why he came to Alaska. He was not a miner. He was a retired teacher, and possibly he was white-haired. He must have been quite old at that time. His name was Charles Taggart, and he taught me a little bit of reading and writing and so forth. But I had no formal schooling until we left and went to Norway, and then I was there for a year and a half and went to school there, learned the language. And then we came back to the States. My mother became ill with anemia, pernicious anemia. So we couldn't come right back to Alaska because she needed blood transfusions and whatever. So we settled in Bellingham, Washington, and intending only to stay until she was able to travel. But it was about 5 years before we could come back. In 1929, we came back. And by that time, I was put into the third grade when we got to Bellingham in 1924. And I finished the grade school there, and we came to Alaska, back to the mine.
So you, was it up until you were seven that you lived out at Deadwood Creek?
Yes, I had.
When you left and went to outside and another country, was it, do you remember having any problems adjusting or from growing up on the,
kind of environment? It was very different for me because, first of all, those men up on the creek, were my, I called them my boys. They were all my friends, you know, and I didn't want to leave them. When time came to say goodbye, I started to cry, said I wanted to stay with my boys on Deadwood. And anyway, then we were in Seattle, and then we went to Wisconsin and visited relatives of my dad's. And one of the strange things is my dad's cousin had a friend who was a school teacher, and she asked this teacher if she would like to have me come to school. They were going to, I imagine the kids thought I would be a little Eskimo or whatever. I don't know what they thought, but of course I spoke with a Norwegian accent myself, which I didn't realize until I must have sounded really funny, you know, a little kid speaking with a Norwegian accent. But this cousin came to visit us in 1934 after I'd finished school, and she said, "You know, Ruth, you were the funniest little tiny girl," she said, "with this Norwegian accent," she said, and I know I was.
We'll be back in just a moment with my guests Roy and Ruth Olson on Meet a Pioneer.
Alaskans have always been famous for their hospitality, the same wonderful hospitality you still find at the Two Rivers Lodge, where Don and Stasha Troutman offer the best menu and interior, a comfortable, quiet atmosphere, and that famous Alaskan welcome to the people who are today's history makers. If you've been meaning to try one of the most talked about dining experiences in the Alaskan interior, don't wait any longer. Go out tonight to the Two Rivers Lodge, 16 mile Chena Hot Springs Road.
Meet a Pioneer is sponsored in part by the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop. Sam and Jane McConkie believe beautiful things are timeless, and everything you find at the Forget-Me-Not shop is beautiful. Fine linens, silver, crystal, decorator items for your home or office, and that little something for special friends. Forget-Me-Not adds a feeling of luxury to even the most practical items. So, for beautiful things for years to come, for your friends, your home, or for yourself, remember the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop, open 10 to 6, 6 days a week in Northgate Square. Meet a Pioneer is about Alaskan pioneers and the history of our last frontier. And Last Frontier Realty celebrates the past and its link to our future. You're invited to visit their office at the corner of Airport and Barnett, an original Fairbanks home completely restored, including archival photographs of the interior. On the Last Frontier Realty staff are some of the most effective salespeople in Fairbanks. They employ the most up-to-date marketing plans that work for you. And don't you enjoy their friendly messages on their sign outside? Please stop by and visit Last Frontier Realty, proud of our history and proud to sponsor Meet a Pioneer. Alaska's spirit will never die. It lives on in second-generation Alaskans like Dr. Carol Davis of Denali Chiropractic Clinic.
Sponsoring Meet a Pioneer gives Carol an opportunity to show her pride in being an Alaskan and pride in being a member of the world's largest drugless healing profession. Becoming a chiropractor meant years of demanding study, a period of internship, and then meeting tough licensing standards. She's happy to talk about chiropractic with anyone interested in learning more about it. Just call 456-5252 or stop by and see Dr. Carol Davis at 1018 College Road on the east edge of Kramer's Field. Now back to our program, Meet a Pioneer.
Welcome back. My guests are Roy and Ruth Olson. Now, Ruth, just really quickly, I thought it was interesting about growing up in the Creek. Now, your folks stayed there in mind, but you continued your education. I think that's an interesting story.
Well, there were, of course, no schools out in that area as there are now. There's grade school and high school at Central. But even when my children were growing up, there was no school there. And so if I wanted an education, it was necessary to come to town. And I was out of school 1 year between grade school and high school, and I don't know exactly why. I presume it was maybe my folks couldn't afford to come in and get a home for the winter here, and possibly thought I was too young to have me come and live with other people. But in my junior year, sophomore year, my mother came in with me. My junior year, I stayed at the Joe Crossan home. He was a pilot here, and they were very well-known, nice people. And so I spent my junior year with them, and that was the year that I met Roy. I went to a dance, and there he was. Mm-hmm. And we were introduced, and that was the beginning of our romance, I guess I might say. And then in my senior year, my mother came to town with me, too. And so I was out of school then, and then I had planned to go to work if I could get a job, but jobs weren't all that plentiful, and so I did go to college. It wasn't the university. I'd go to college for 1 year. And I remember walking out the railroad tracks to go out there to save the bus fare. There wasn't all that much money, you know. And anyway, it was a nice day, and I walked out there and was interviewed to see whether I could get a job in the dining room working for my, you know, for my board. And then I was given a scholarship from the girl who had actually won the scholarship in our class. There were only six girls in our class. And she was living in town, so she said I was welcome to use that if I wanted. And so that is how I happened to go to college for a year. And that was the extent of my education.
You married September 2nd, 1935.
September
7th. Yes. I'm sorry, 7th.
That's right. Uh-huh, that's right.
And that was out at the camp, at the Deadwood Creek?
Yes, at my parents' cabin, two-room cabin. And Roy was working for the road commission at the time, and I think from there you could take it, Roy, and explain who you worked with and what about it.
Oh, well, I really enjoyed working for the road commission in those early days. The road commission then had a more of a pioneering purpose in those days, I believe, in carving new roads out into areas that were hard to get to. And
what did you do for the road commission? Did you
I
drive?
I was hauling supplies to the camps, engineering camps and early construction camps. And I really enjoyed that work because those roads were really a challenge.
What roads were they? Where were they going?
Well, mostly the Livengood Road and the Steese Highway and out to Richardson, Donnelly Dome, and Then later on, the Hickel Highway to towards Prudhoe Bay and Saguan. But in recalling all those early camps, I remember a few names that I think would a lot of people would like to hear again, and I'll mention a few.
Mm-hmm.
Like Lloyd Lounsbury was our shop foreman, and he was a great help in organizing equipment for those ventures. And real early engineering was Clarence Berglund, or he was assistant to our district engineer, Frank Nash. And in speaking about district engineers, in my memory, there were only two, and that's Frank Nash and Woody Johansson. And then there's Elmer Parkinson and Alan Brown, T. Hugh Wilson, and Bill Cameron, Ollie Backlund, George Vincent. I could name a lot more, but that'll probably...
You mentioned that it was... You felt that you were really pioneering roads. What difficulties did you encounter? What specific things were challenges?
Well, they encountered so many difficulties in going through frost areas and or rock areas, high altitudes, and crossing summits. And
what was the most difficult piece of road you worked on?
Oh, I would say I think about the greatest challenge the highway department here had was the road to Saguan, which was in the winter time. And it was a matter of just getting over the road, over the land, not building a road, just getting a road built that you could drive trucks over, and not necessarily passenger cars. But they did make it, and by building an ice bridge over the Yukon, and just carving out the timber and plowing the snow. And
Did you actually live at the camps along with the road commission, or did you come back into town?
I drove back and forth mostly. Sometimes I got to stay overnight.
Now, how long did you work for the Alaska Road Commission?
Well, a total of 28 and a half years in my whole career. And went through, well, four. First it was the War Department under federal government, and then the Department of Commerce, and then the Department of Interior, and then under statehood, which is the Department of Transportation. So it was really four departments.
My gosh, it really went through a lot of changes.
Highway supervision.
You mentioned when we were speaking yesterday that you remember your first car you bought and how much you paid for it.
Yeah, I remember when Ruth was in the hospital having our first child, Sylvia, I went down to Service Motors and I bought a Chevrolet sedan for $1,250. And that was on time. In those days, if you didn't have the money, you didn't have to make any payments in the winter time. And there was no interest charged either. You just let it slide till next spring when you started working, and you started your payments again. And that's the way it went.
Boy, those are the good old days.
And I'd say, yes, they were.
Was that common for, a lot of people that you, when winter came, people would just put your payments on hold if it needed to be?
A lot of, yes.
Wow. Why did you decide you wanted to have a new car on the day that your child was born? Any particular reason?
I just wanted to bring our baby home in a new car.
Oh. I think that's pretty nice. Boy, that was a special day. You were going to mention also about the wireless communication.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Yes, well, in the, of course, in the very early days, in the 20s, before that, the only news that the people got on the creeks was from the wireless station at Circle. And at 8 o'clock at night, the wireless operator, the one I remember particularly was Mr. Barnett, and he would, there was a certain ring on the, see, there were phones all on all the creeks and phone service, which telephone company belonged to the Rasmussens at Circle, and so he would ring this particular ring. I think it was possibly just one ring, and people were to pick up their phones, and he would call the roll, and if you didn't answer, then they figured something was wrong, and the neighbors would go and see if this person was all right. And I remember one particular night, I think I was about 5 years old, when our neighbor didn't answer, and my dad and one of the other men went and found him dead of a heart attack. And this was one way of keeping track of your neighbors in the winter, and, well, any time, really. So the telephones were a lot of comfort to the people, and I think they paid $5 a month. I believe that was what it cost. And of course, people kept up their own lines. It was just very.
So they had a roll call, huh? That's interesting.
Yes, yes. I think that's what.
And if you didn't respond, they'd figure we better go out and take a look.
That's right. Yes, that was what. Well, there was quite a distance between neighbors, you know. This particular neighbor was about a half a mile, I think, from my folks, but some of them were further away. And it was just, people did look out for one another a lot at those days, you know, and pretty much had to.
Go ahead.
Excuse me, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say we'll take our final break, and we'll be back with Roy and Ruth Olson on Meet a Pioneer.
Hi, this is Rudy Voigt. We need Wolfgang Falk on the Borough Assembly for his knowledge on first, second, and third class borough law. Wolfgang Falk is also knowledgeable on state law and the Constitution of the United States. For more personal freedom, honesty in government, elect Wolfgang Falk to the Assembly seat G and School Board seat B.
I'm Wolfgang Falk. I paid for this ad with the help of my friends. My address is Box 1166, Fairbanks 99707.
The Binkley family of Fairbanks take pride in the history of Alaska. They have a lot of history of their own. My golly, three generations of riverboat captains on interior riverways. As original sponsors of Meet a Pioneer, the Riverboat Discovery congratulates Gail Malloy and KFAR Radio on the first anniversary of this program. By the way, the Sternwheelers are up for the winter, but the Binkley family continues to enjoy, and the Binkley family continues to support Meet a Pioneer and look forward to seeing you next May aboard the Riverboat Discovery. Way to go, Gail Malloy.
Well, thank you very much, Steve Agbaba. We are awfully proud of that. Roy and Ruth Olson are our first anniversary guests on this program. It was a year ago on the 5th of October that our first guest was Mr. Stan Bennett. We've had many, many since, and it's certainly nice to have you on the, well, I guess the Meet a Pioneer roll of honor.
Well, thank you. It's really a pleasure for us to be here on this occasion. And I would like to thank Wanda Richmond very much for having you ask us to be on the program. She's a very special friend of ours.
Well, your story is certainly interesting, growing up in the mining camp. From a child's point of view, you saw things certainly from a different light. You got to know some very interesting people. I was fascinated with the picture I saw yesterday. I don't know all the story behind it, but a young Eva McGown and you. You were about 14 or
yes, something. Uh-huh. I was 13 or 14, well, yes.
Uh-huh. Where was that taken?
Well, when? In 1929, I believe. She was staying at Circle Hot Springs because with her sick husband. She brought him up there thinking that the water there is very, really beneficial in some cases for people who are ill, and I think she thought that it would help him, but her husband was in the restaurant business here. He had the Model Cafe, I think, wasn't it? Arthur McGowan, anyway. They were there that whole winter, and it was quite common for people to go and couples to go and stay all winter. In fact, sometimes my parents did for a few months in the winter over there, maybe a month or two. And a lot of the couples of their age group did, the Zimmermans and, oh, I could name the Bartletts and quite a few. And they would have a good time with parties and dances and card playing and just being there was that was really the place to go in the winter. And so that's how I knew Eva McGown.
Now, you did at some point move into town, but you didn't miss your connections out in the mining district at all.
Oh, no, no. We moved in when our girls were of school age. I taught them 1 year myself, but I thought...
Out in the camp, huh? You taught the girls?
Well, at Circle Hot Springs. That was... they were 6 and 8, I believe. The older, two older girls.
Uh-huh.
And, or maybe they were 8 and 10. Anyway, it doesn't matter. And that we were expecting our third daughter then, and so our third child, and turned out to be a third daughter, who lives in Anchorage now. And our two older daughters are Sylvia, who is married to Dick Bullion, and Luella, who is married to Fred Hupridge. And our daughter Loris in Anchorage is not married now. And then we have the 5 grandchildren. Sylvia has 2 daughters, one of whom lives in Portland. Jackie is her name. And her son, Tom, is a senior, and her daughter, Amy, is a sophomore. And Luella has 2 sons, Roy, who works for Northland Dairy. He's 24. And her son, Noel, is 16 and a junior in high school. Incidentally, he just turned 16, so he was able to get his driver's license.
Oh,
that was a big day.
Yes.
And Tom got his last year, so Amy can't wait till next year when she can get hers. Anyway, they're all a great pleasure. I think we're very fortunate that all of them live in Alaska except Jackie, and she is able to come home once in a while.
What's the home that you had out there that now is somebody's lodge?
Oh, yes. 3 years ago, we were able to sell... We thought it was time to move to Fairbanks again. And so the people who now manage Circle Hot Springs, Bob and Loretta LaRude, came and asked if they could buy our place and make a business of it, which we felt very fortunate. It was the first time that a state loan had been granted for outside of the borough. And they qualified and bought the place, and we bought the house in Fairbanks. All of this went through very quickly, and so we are very happy, though we do have a summer home up there where we go back as occasionally.
You'll never separate your connections with that place.
Oh, no.
As a little
girl. I'm real thankful that Roy liked it as well as he does, and the children all like it, so it'll always be part of our lives. And I think maybe Roy has something more to say now.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I might mention that I had a couple of ventures at mining in 39 and 40 on and once again at in 46 on Switch Creek, which is a tributary of Deadwood, compared with the big equipment mining that's going on now and the high price of gold, I was just a pick and shovel miner. But we really enjoyed it and had a lot of fun, and it was a good, wholesome life, too. I don't know, in closing, I might say that we've really enjoyed our life in the interior here, and especially around Fairbanks and the Circle area. And I sure want to thank Dale for letting us say a few words.
Oh, it's been fun to have you here, both of you.
Thank you. Well, I too want to thank you, Gail, and it was just such a nice experience to be here. I might add a little funny note here that the first time that Roy came up to see me on Deadwood Creek, he had the road commission truck, and he got stuck in a mud hole. So my dad and a few of the other men had to go down and help him get out of the mud hole. I thought, well, there he goes. He'll never come back. Fortunately, he did.
And the road commission didn't know he'd had that truck, huh?
Oh, whether they knew it or not, I'm not sure.
Oh.
But anyway, he didn't get fired.
Who was your boss?
Frank Nash.
Frank Nash.
This, incidentally, he is in Seattle in a rest home, and he's 92 years old, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he was sent an invitation. He and Roy's sister were the only two people, living now, who were at our wedding, and he wasn't able to come, but he wrote us a nice letter. Thank you, Gail, so much.
You've been listening to Meet a Pioneer. A taped version of this interview will become a part of the permanent oral history collection of the Alaskan Polar Regions Department at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. This program was produced by Gail Malloy.
K-F-A-R. Grading, the only operational anti-satellite system, an in-depth air defense system, and an extensive civil defense network.
And NITSU says the Soviets could be ready to deploy advanced defense systems based in space by the end of this century. President Reagan took his Star Wars campaign to Parsippany, New Jersey this afternoon. In a speech prepared for a Republican audience, the president said the Republican Party, with the help of many Democrats, has stood up for the Star Wars plan in the face of demands it be abandoned. I'll have more after this.
You get the facts, the who, the when, the why.